Good evening, everyone. Wednesday night, 7 o'clock. It's December 18th. We are studying The Hidden Work by E.J. Gold. The first email I sent out regarding The Hidden Work introduced Chapter 1. Chapter 1 discusses a fragment of a parchment that is found that hints at something. And the author in that chapter suggests, what if this is all you had? What could you therefore build on? And that was a chapter, and we introduced at that time chapter summaries, and that chapter was done by George and Lupe. And we've made it to 15 chapters. That email was sent out in October of 2012. So we've worked on this book together for over a year. One of the unusual things in this particular adventure is that we have aggressively worked to form groups. And one of the principles in chapter 15, which is what we'll be winding up with tonight, one of the principles is the principle of combining. I'm sure that combinality is not a word, but it's this idea of forming the group and the acknowledgement that a group is actually formed. So several times during the last year, what we've done is we've formed groups, one or two people getting together and working on creating a chapter summary. Then we took it to a whole other level in chapter 14, where we experimented with angel training. And in angel training, what we did is groups of people came together at their own whim to decide about creating a space for particular angels as indicated on page 149 in the Seven Celestial Halls. And we found some remarkable things occurring. And one of the common threads in the commentary about it is that each of the angels and each of the invocations that occurred with people there was a unique, what I'm going to call tonality. And in a certain way, the best way to put it is there was a unique vibratory sensation with each of those seven presentations that occurred, indicating that there, when we were able to allow the beginnings of an invocation of these angels, each of them presented in a certain way in a unique vibratory sensation. We have left the realm of discussing, gosh, I wonder if I know how to awaken the machine. And we've, in a certain way, we've taken the concept of, let's assume we're already there. Now, how do we work together? And it's interesting because when you come together as a group, you actually force yourself to a different high and higher standard of being together. Because you know that the people that we're working with, the people that are there with you, are interested in a higher standard. They're not interested, as T.S. Eliot says, you know, we are the empty men leaning together. No, but we are the vibrant individuals that are experimenting with the hints that are given to us in this volume, but also in other spiritual literature where it says, work, do something. You know, what, and then experiment and then report back, you seekers of truth. Report back and say, what did you therefore find out? We're not so much in the path, in the spiritual path, is you're either all the way there or you're zero. Well, I'm taking the position that we can do experimentation, and we have done that experimentation. What, as we conclude with this chapter and this volume, one thing I want us to be aware of, as we walk the earth, as we go about our day, as we go about whatever it is we do, to notate the frequency, the vibratory frequency that you sense around you, even the intent to do that will put you in a different space, will arise to something different within yourself. And the machine, the ego machine, the ego of the machine says, oh, I always forget it. Since I always forget it, I'm not going to try. Wrong answer. The right answer is, you don't know how to do it very well. We don't know how to do it perfectly. So what? Do it sloppily, but do it. And experiment with the gift that you were given, the gratitude that we can show of the simple existence of incarnating as a human, and what can we now do with that? I strongly suggest, as a capstone in a certain way, that each of you consider going on to the website wingsofchaos.com, chapter 15, and reading the chapter summary that was written by Silverdale. Print it out. Copy and paste it, print it out, and study it. It's a nice review of the book in a certain way that gets us to where we are now. The book is it's a discussion of prayer absolute and how our work with prayer absolute gets us, opens certain portals. It opens certain portals, and it's through our own work then that once those portals are presented to us, what shall we then do with them? Okay? So, I would like to take a little bit of time in a certain concluding about chapter 15, and I'd like Silverdale to help out in this point. And where we left off last time, George, we were working with your summary, and we were just about to begin on the part called Overview, Chapter 15. So right now, we're reading directly from the chapter summary that Silverdale has put together. And do you want to get us started on that, George?
Yeah, David, I'll tell you, I'm just looking for that piece of paper. Hey, you're only getting a minute to print it out here.
Why don't I start? I'll read a couple of paragraphs, and maybe by then you'll have it.
Yeah.
And you can take over then.
Okay.
And you'll find this, like I said, on Chapter 15 under wingsofchaos.com, the hidden work. So I'm going to read from it, overview of Chapter 15. During the 19th century, Mendeleev arranged the elements in an order which showed regular repeating patterns in their behavior and properties. The arrangement forms the basis for the periodic table of angels, which organizes them according to their frequencies in hertz. In chemistry, periodicity occurs on the basis of atomic number. In angelology, periodicity occurs on the basis of frequency. The frequency determines where each angel appears on the scale. We learn to identify, very critical sentence here, we learn to identify our essential self as a vibratory sensation because we have succeeded in liberating the electrical field from the human biological machine, we can begin to understand that angels also have their own vibratory frequency. So here we see ourselves, rather than we truly start to become and practice interiority. We become interior beings rather than exterior beings. Rather than looking in the mirror and saying, yeah, I'm that guy. I'm the guy that's talking to you right now. No, I am a vibratory frequency. And yes, you know, I know Hawkley is saying, I don't know if she's on or not, but it's like, yes, we are part and parcel. We are a segment of the absolute. There's no question about that. But change our focus from the external, how people relate to us, how we relate to other people, and do they like us, do they not like us, all that stuff, to what is the nature of my particular vibratory frequency? As you begin to understand that a little bit more, what occurs is then you can recognize fellow travelers. On occasion, I have the opportunity to speak with individuals on the phone. And after we work for a while, we realize that we are in a totally different vibratory space. And it begins to feel like home. But it happens because of the work we put in to, in a sense, leave the world and be in interiority. Okay? George, are you ready?
Yes, I am, David. And I'd like to just add a reminder for all of us that if we go back to the beginning of the human biological machine.
Right.
EJ makes the point that our essential self is submerged within the electrical field of our essential self is submerged in the heavy, dominant, organic materiality of our biological machine. And,
right.
Of course, all of the conditioning that arises that forms our personality. And we're grateful to have an organic body and personality because it allows us to juggle the multiplicity and diversity of the environment that we find ourselves in. One of the things that Beelzebub points out, one of the things Gurdjieff points out in his Beelzebub's tales is that each of us is comprised of three different forces, three separate, independent, autonomous, but co-equal and heterogeneous forces. And sadly, as Beelzebub notes, we only develop one of these three forces in the course of our lifetime, our historical personality. But and for this reason, the other two forces, one of which might be characterized as our essential self, kind of becomes atrophied. It remains, but it's just never strengthened or educated or developed.
There's nothing in the world, in a sense, that encourages that.
Exactly.
The world itself doesn't, nature doesn't provide a form for that development.
And one of the reasons we're grateful to EJ is in his written material, he suggests ideas as to how we might begin practical work on self in which we try to, again, pacify the dominance of the human biological machine in order to make some space for the arising of our essential self, which, of course, in the beginning is just so much gobbledygook. But over time, we actually do begin to experience this inner vibratory sensation, which is really nothing more than the life force of the absolute. And it is characterized by the sense of the unity of everything existing. It's there is no differentiation of any kind, and for that reason it can be entirely impartial, because nothing is more or less significant than anything else.
Right.
And then what we discover once we have our essential self kind of humming along is the kind of this overview you just read, that we actually find that this vibratory sensation actually runs across a spectrum from fast frequency at the high end to lower
right.
frequencies down somewhere below. And so anyway, that's where we are at this point.
Yeah, and jump ahead a bit and go ahead and...
So I think the next paragraph I quote in my summary is that the spectrum produced by the fragmenting of a single tonic, the absolute, is unbroken from the densest matter to the most rapidly vibrating energy, from the most stable point of matter to the highest point of excitation of energy. When one goes up and down the spectrum, the universe seems to be made of different material, but it never changes. Only our perceptions of it do. Ultimately, the position of an individual in creation depends on the scale to which it naturally gravitates. So I comment on that idea, that the growth and development of our essential self should serve as an elevator which enables us to pass from the lower and greater density of the organic material world into the higher ethereal and subtle worlds of angelic presences. And that's really what evolutionary transformation is intended to do, allow us to elevate, get onto an elevator, push a floor button, go to whatever floor we want, and expect to find the things on that floor that we had already perhaps anticipated.
Right. So our ability to do that is not facile at the moment. We're not able to simply operate our own elevator. We can, from time to time, take part in that elevation, particularly, and we saw when we worked together as groups, that the elevator does work. But we're at the beginning of that training. And the beginning of that training is, at least we start to see that it is possible. We start to see that we are a vibratory being, not a physicality. Tough, tough change to make, but it's possible.
And you know, Dave, one of the things I very much appreciated about the study of the seven choirs and halls is that we put together groups of individuals who created kind of their own angelic elevator, and then let us that because of their differences and yet common interests, took us to a specific floor of the creation. Very interesting.
Yeah. So we were able to experience, once again, you know, we were able to experience a different frequency guided by different groups of angelic choirs. So those choirs assisted us in getting to a particular celestial hall. And they became guides. And guess what? We were able to follow. That's important to note about yourselves here. At this point, we have the ability, the skill, somewhat to follow. Okay? So note that part too. Okay? Go ahead.
I then quote this paragraph from page 167. We can also give names to specific segments of the electromagnetic spectrum. The segment which interests us is the segment we call angels. Angels are a specific frequency. There is a tuning scale for each angel, for each angelic reality. Think of a piano. The same notes, but at different pitches, depending upon whether you go up or down the piano scale.
Right.
Through the use of tuning devices, we can access those frequency values. It is these frequencies which correspond to the atomic numbers on the periodic table of elements. If we want to access angels, all we need to know is how to access their particular frequencies. And so on that, I comment, what we need to know is how to adjust the frequency of our own essential self in order to resonate with a specific angelic frequency. And then, of course, even though we don't at this time have the tools or experience with which to achieve this, clearly we're doing pioneering work in this class together. We're trying to verify experientially the ideas that EJ has so masterfully presented.
Yeah, and I think as a group we can say that we did have some success at that, at the beginnings of it. And I also want to note that there are certain individuals that from time to time, they got hooked on their angel. There was something very important to it. Like there were certain individuals, anyway, they got hooked on their angel. What does that mean? It means something, it's an interior thing. That means that frequency of invocation spoke profoundly to that individual. And it had meaning and import to them. Without meaning and import, unless you awaken that in yourself, it is not going to go anywhere. It's just going to be another intellectual exercise. But for some individuals, they caught that fire. And I can think back and I can remember some of those specific frequencies. Can I dial them in? No, not quite. I'm assured of the fact that they exist, though. Just because I can't fully access it, doesn't mean it's not possible for me to access it. So we become, as the commentary says, we need to know how to adjust the frequencies of our own essential self. So how do we move? I've used the term many times. We move by a certain form of mood. What I really mean is we move by a recognition of frequency differences.
And David, just following up on that, it's important, I think, to recognize that in the same way that each of us have different strengths and weaknesses, maybe somebody is gifted at playing the piano or somebody else is gifted at oratory or somebody else is a gifted scholar or a gifted car mechanic, and we also each have drawbacks, weaknesses, things that we aren't quite as skilled in. I think that part of our essential self is attuned to certain angels, but not so much to others, and it really becomes a process of self-observation to discover for ourselves which angels we might actually be more attuned to, and then from there, from that beachhead, begin our expansion into other possibilities.
From that beachhead, I got an email from somebody just before we did. Zodkale. And that person said, I've always been attracted to this angel. You know, it's like, where did that come from? But it's because the group took the time to make it available in a sense. Then that person could resonate and was able to come out to it. Yeah, some people have a strong affinity. And don't forget the archangels, They're like the doorkeepers of the whole set of frequencies that occur. Later on, we can discuss things. We'll see it as we go through the next book. So we'll see it that they're cosmic maintainers. There's certain jobs that a frequency does. One thing it does is it recognizes its the purity of its own frequency, and it doesn't allow there to be dross that comes in, impurities that come in. It sticks with it. And that's the only judgment or not judgment, on frequency or not on frequency. Interesting. Good.
David,
thank you. Yes.
There's an interesting question here by Ivan. I wonder
Ivan?
If people have comments on tuning devices. Again, by Ivan. I think that's Ivan.
Remember, Ivan. Go ahead.
That was his question. He wondered if people here tonight have comments on tuning devices, on how we would tune ourselves, as Silverdale has suggested.
Yeah. Okay, would people like to comment on it?
David, I typed in my own comment to Ivan's question regarding tuning devices. And of course, EJ refers to tuning devices that measure, a whetstone bridge and these other kind of things. I never found one at Walmart, so I've gone back to what Gurdjieff said, which is we all have a common integral vibration. We're comprised of a common integral vibration, which I describe as our own vibratory sensation of our essential self. And then that's our own tuning fork and the means by which we might be able to extend the borders of our awareness.
Yeah. The critical tuning fork or the tuning device is your own ability to sense, your own sensing mechanism of yourself. So it's the interior work that's the hard part here, Agenbite. It's to actually put in the work, your own interior work. Of course, there are things that are helpful. Sounds, bells, gongs, scents, candles, colors. No question about it, and a combination of those. But the trap there is we go, oh, if I have the right combination of those external things, it'll work. Maybe it'll work. But how do you be assured of it? You have a sense of what that interior vibratory sensation is. So it's working on that. Sorry, that's the way in. Hard work, that's the way in.
Well, and I have a comment.
Great.
I think that if we can allow ourselves to open our vibrational field up, then we can get closer to reaching the vibrational field of a particular angel. So
yeah.
In my personal experience, I was doing all this research on Gabriel and just, learning different facts. And then all of a sudden, I just felt as if I was with it, Gabriel. And I just felt like I knew Gabriel completely. I was just, for a moment, was one with, because we were just kind of vibrating in the same space.
Yeah. So in a case like that, because Susan had put in the work to, in a certain way, acquiesce, I don't want to use the word surrender because it has such an overtone of giving up, but acquiesce is more, I think, a more dynamic term.
I like allow, but that's me.
Yeah, but acquiesce is a form of allowing, you know.
Right.
But you have to be active. It's not like you passively allow. You actively are waiting for it. And then, because you have the ability to recognize, you find it. And then you can go there. So you become a vibratory navigator.
David Batra offered a one-word suggestion, and his tuning device is conscience.
Very good. Very good. It's another, what works for you? So when you're working with other individuals, that might be like a ground level for Batra is conscience. And that is, in a certain way, how he navigates. So we find that's the answer is, what are the tuning devices? They're interior tools that we have perfected, are honing, are getting better at, all of that stuff. That's the tool. We form the tool, and we're the guides. Think of these guys 500 years ago heading across the Atlantic Ocean, and they really didn't have devices that modern navigation has today. How did they get there? They did find tools in order to get there. It was very difficult. Anyway.
David, there are more comments if you wish.
Please, yeah, go ahead.
Gnostic man, there is something important in sensing the difference between our common vibratory sensation and the aspect of our vibratory field that is unique to our essential self.
I think it's critical, Gnostic man, for that distinction to occur, for us to be aware of that as much as we're able to. That's part of our work as junior voyagers. The better we can do that, the better we're going to be able to operate in the higher vibratory spaces. Go ahead.
Agni Vidaya says, yes, discernment is equally important.
Yeah, but we're talking about the discernment, the inner discernment, not the discernment that someone shoves down your throat or the discernment of external objects. And I happen to know that she does understand that very well. So it's our internal discernment. What a great tool to have, if we're able to have that ourselves. Isn't that wonderful? Like, we can be that. We can own a little part of our own universe once and for all. And gradually we begin to see that it's a droplet of the absolute that has been put in our keeping, so to speak. Go ahead, Harry.
That's all for right now that I have.
Excellent. Great comment. That was a great comment, George, that one about adjust the frequencies of our own essential self. Do you want to continue?
Absolutely. I think this next point is, again, just a way of clarifying what this chapter is about and perhaps what the whole book is about. This is from page 168. Periodicity is the natural result of the fragmentation of primal energy into sound and light. Forms of energy and matter progressively slower, less energetic, and more dense. Through the influence of resonance, sound in a lower harmonic can be used to produce an effect in the corresponding higher tonic. It is possible to excite and resonate a higher tonic with a lower harmonic. to energize and activate the tonic from the harmonic, to manipulate the harmonic, thereby discovering the vibration that activates the tonic. Really, this is just saying everything
yeah.
is a piano scale.
Yeah.
If you hit a C at the bottom of one octave, you can hit the C at the bottom of the next higher octave, and the two will resonate with one another, and that's exactly the comment I make. The principle of resonance is perhaps the most important tool available to us to achieve angelic training. If only we knew not just how to use it, but how to apply it. And in many ways, I think of it as learning to play the piano. Initially, it might seem overwhelming, but with practice, geez, what do you know? It's not that tough after all.
It actually becomes possible. And we understand, we've all had the experience of taking a tuning fork, striking it, and then holding it near, let's say, a guitar string, and the guitar string starts to vibrate. I think this is partly what Susan is telling us, too, is that if you hold yourself in a certain position and allow a particular frequency to come in, then but you're starting with a particular resonance and you activate it in a higher principle too. We are experimenting here. We're experimenting and we're bringing the fruits of our experimentation together to our fellow travelers. That's our job. That's what we're doing. Each of us is selecting one unit, one small experiment that we've brought together. We're saying, this is how it worked for me. Okay, good. Okay.
And again, just kind of a final summary from page 168, 169. The law of octaves is the result of this fragmentation from the level of the solar absolute through the entire spectrum of creation, including the lowest forms of matter. Fragmentation of unity leads to multiplicity. The original tonic becomes composite harmonics. We cannot define the primary, nor can we see any trace of it other than in the periodicity which ensues. Consequently, the periodic unity amongst the multiplicity of phenomena is the reflection of a unified whole fragmenting its composite parts and taking many forms as it descends from the primary.
Mm-hmm.
By the time we encounter atomic matter, many cosmic events have occurred that we cannot observe. This is the unmanifested side of creation.
Mm.
The pre-creation spectrum, antecedent to the observable creation, is understandably not visible today, nor are angels who are only situated far beyond the ultraviolet segment of the spectrum. To this, I offer the comment, this is the whole of chapter 15 in a nutshell. Angels represent the fracturing and fragmenting of the primal tonic of the absolute as it begins its descent toward the formation of the visible creation. Don Juan described these as inorganic beings, that is, intelligent entities without a gross material form. And David, I'd like to just throw in one other comment. Gurdjieff has seemed to indicate that the primary aim of all religions and schools in philosophies is to explain how unity passes into multiplicity and diversity, and equally important, how we can recombine the multiplicity and diversity of our experience back into the original unity. And that's really what transformation is.
A noble purpose.
David Ogney has written that what George said was profound, and I would like to second that.
Yeah.
Well, thank you.
Absolutely. What we've done in this, in our study of this particular book, and the introduction and beginning, the beginnings of the practice of prayer absolute, what it has achieved is that we can, we're beginning to touch that unseen universe and acknowledge that it exists, and to use Susan's term, allow it to come in its own way. We're verifying the existence of that. We're verifying it through our own efforts working together. We're verifying that the pre-creation spectrum antecedent to the observable creation is understandably not visible today, nor are angels who are only situated far beyond the ultraviolet spectrum. Okay, there is creation, and it's vibrant. It's vibrant, it's active, it's alive, beyond what we can just visibly see. All we're saying is, let's acknowledge that. And then we'll begin to discover it and see what it's like. It's a different take on angels, isn't it? You know, we think of angels as, I want to thank you for the Physics of Angels. I think, is that the name of the book? Did I get it right?
Yes.
Yeah. And, you know, there they begin to discuss in the book the fact that angels are not these little cherubs or these nice little uncles and aunts with their arm around you taking care of you. That's a different thing. I don't even know what that is. All I know is that angels are immense and powerful. And as they point out in the beginning of the book, it says that, you know, every time in the Bible you meet an angel, it says, be not afraid. Because they are immense. But we're starting to touch that just a little bit. We're starting to touch it just a little bit. So allow ourselves to do that and open up and see that that world is a real world. And somewhere in here, I think, or maybe it was just in commentary where George said that it's our, how we view it is the universe is what makes it different. How do we view it? And that has to do with where do we stand in our interiority. Do we stand in the external? Are we a slave to that forever? Or can we begin to have our eyes planted in our interior and walk through the planet, walk on the planet in a different manner? And I think that's the gift and the hope of this chapter, of this book, is just declaring and saying, yes, this exists. Go forth and verify it. It's not our job to prove it to anybody. Rather, it's our job to verify it for ourselves. Okay?
David, there's another comment by Gnostic Man.
Please.
Attention to the energy system of our biological machine, the chakras, can be a helpful tuning device. striking the tone of our essential self, then noting the harmonics up and down the totem.
Yes, absolutely. What Gnostic Man is suggesting is start experimenting with this as a vibratory device. Actually experiment with it. So when you're in that next space, we're gonna hang up in 10, 15 minutes or something like that, and we'll go on to our next space. Are you able to maintain a particular interiority, or you get swept back into the external? Of course you're going to get swept back into it, but let's develop the tools that allow us to come back and sit in our home again. And our home is this interiority that is spoken of eloquently, I think, in Prayer Absolute itself. We'll read that at the end. We'll close with that again. But I just want to remind us that we are vibratory sensations finding our way, weaving our way. What else you got there, Harry?
That's all for right now, David.
So how did this happen? How were we able to do what we've done so far? We did it because the group energy,
yes,
was consistent. We experimented as a group.
We yielded to each other.
And we were able to yield to each other in various ways. And we listened to each other, we allowed each other, but more importantly, we showed up. We show up, and with common intention, attempt to experiment and uncover something. So, it's not any individual, it's not even any small subgroup of individuals. It's all the individuals together. Every individual plays a remarkable tone. And there are people that perform certain tasks that occur here that don't even, you never see. I see. But they're critical to this occurring together. And we're doing it. I think Mark Circa said at one point, he says, we're doing this on the bloody internet. You know, we're doing it over some internet somehow. And people have done it and come together and worked vibrantly without the necessity of being physically there together. Isn't that interesting? Just fascinating to me.
I still have trouble wrapping my mind around it, David. 5 years ago, I would not have thought it even remotely possible.
And now you can see that it does occur.
It just amazes me.
And I believe that it's because we are not physical beings, but we are vibratory individuals. I have dynamic conversations with individuals over the phone. And they're 1,000, 1,500 miles away, and it's almost as effective as being directly one to another. If you allow it, if you allow the gratitude of being with another fellow worker, and they're able to allow that with you, and to explore and experiment together. It's a thing of great beauty that we can bring. So if we each bring a small part of what becomes a greater whole, and that's what we've been doing for the last 14 months, it's over a year. So this will be the last class for this particular book of The Hidden Work. And online under wingsofchaos.com are many, many audio recordings of classes, and there's chapter summaries all over the place, and there's class logs. And then on chapter 14, you can go in and you can literally download the presentations, not the verbal parts always, but presentations of seven angelic groups. There's an encyclopedia of work there that these individuals have put together. It's profound. So I appreciate all of the work that everybody's put in together to make this occur. We'll take a couple of weeks. Go ahead, Harry.
I apologize for interrupting you. I just wanted to say we appreciate your leadership through this whole process.
Yes, we do.
Thank you. Thank
yes,
you both very much.
It's been a remarkable journey.
Yes, it has. So we'll take a few weeks off, and then we're going to pick up a different book. And that book is The American Book of the Dead. And we're going to not read it as a Labyrinth Reader's Course. We're not going to read it as a practitioner. They lost the video. Well, it looks like you've lost the video. Yeah, do they still have the audio? Is the audio still going on the computer?
That I don't know. I have it turned off so I don't get a loop.
Go ahead and say something, Dave.
How about now? Is the audio still working or not working?
No, it's not.
Okay. I think the server went down again. So, unfortunately, why don't you type into the log, Lost Horizon, that we, the system has failed. See everybody in a few weeks. And for all my phone companions, I'm so glad that you're there. It is so important to me to know that you're there. So thank you guys much.
Dave, thanks for leading us.
Yes, sir. George, I'm going to go read your posting.
Okay, thanks, Harry.
I can hardly wait.
So good night, everybody.
Good night.